Chainfire by Terry Goodkind. To Vincent Casella, a man of inspirational intellect, wit, strength, and courage, and a friend who is always there for me. Chapter 1. How much of this blood is his? A woman asked. Most of it, I'm afraid, a second woman said as they both rushed along beside him. As Richard fought to focus his mind on his need to remain conscious, the breathless voices sounded to him as if they were coming from some great dim distance. He wasn't sure who they were. He knew that he knew them. But right then, it just didn't seem to matter. The crushing pain in the left side of his chest and his need for air had him at the ragged edge of panic. It was all he could do to try to draw each crucial breath. Even so, he had a bigger worry. Richard struggled to put voice to his burning concern, but he couldn't form the words, couldn't get out any more than a gasping moan. He clutched the arm of the woman beside him, desperate to get them to stop, to get them to listen. She misunderstood and instead urged the men carrying him to hurry, even though they were already panting with the effort of bearing him over the rocky ground in the deep shade among the towering pines. They tried to be as gentle as possible, but they never dared to slow. Not far off, a rooster crowed into the still air, as if this was an ordinary morning like any other. Richard observed the storm of activity swirling around him with an odd sense of detachment. Only the pain seemed real. He remembered hearing it once said that when you died, no matter how many people were there with you, you died all alone. That's how he felt now, alone. As they broke from the timber into a thinly wooded, rough field of clumped grass, Richard saw above the leafy limbs a leaden sky threatening to unleash torrents of rain. Rain was the last thing he needed. If only it would hold off. As they raced along, the unpainted wooden walls of a small building came into view, followed by a twisting livestock fence weathered to a silver gray. Startled chickens squawked in fright as they scattered out of the way. Men shouted orders. Richard hardly noticed the ashen faces watching him being carried past as he stiffened himself against the dizzying pain of the rough journey. It felt as if he were being ripped apart. The whole mob around him funneled through a narrow doorway and shuffled into the darkness beyond. "Here," the first woman said. Richard was surprised to realize then that it was Nikki's voice. "Put him here, on the table, hurry." Richard heard tin cups clatter as someone swept them aside. Small items thunked to the ground and bounced across a dirt floor. The shutters banged back as they were flung open to let some of the flat light into the musty room. It appeared to be a deserted farmhouse. The walls tilted at odd angles, as if the place were having difficulty standing, as if it might collapse at any moment. Without the people who had once made it home giving it life, it had the aura of a place waiting for death to settle in. Men holding his legs and arms lifted him and then carefully set him down on the crudely hewn plank table. Richard wanted to hold his breath against the crushing agony radiating from the left side of his chest, but he desperately needed the breath that he couldn't seem to get. He needed the breath in order to speak. Lightning flashed. A moment later, thunder rumbled heavily. "Lucky we made it into the shelter before the rain," one of the men said. Nikki nodded absently as she leaned close, groping purposefully across Richard's chest. He cried out, arching his back against the heavy wooden tabletop, trying to twist away from her probing fingers. The other woman immediately pressed his shoulders down to keep him in place. He tried to speak. He almost got the words out, but then he coughed up a mouthful of thick blood. He started choking as he tried to breathe. The woman holding his shoulders turned his head aside. "Spit," she told him as she bent close. The feeling of not being able to get any air brought a flash of hot fear. Richard did as she said. She swept her fingers through his mouth, working to clear an airway. With her help, he finally managed to cough and spit out enough blood to be able to pull in some of the air he so desperately needed. As Nikki's fingers probed the area around the arrow jutting from the left side of his chest, she cursed under her breath. "Dear spirits," she murmured in soft prayer as she tore open his blood-soaked shirt. Let me be in time. I was afraid to pull out the arrow, the other woman said. I didn't know what would happen, didn't know if I should, so I decided I'd better leave it and hope I could find you. Be thankful you didn't try, Nikki said, her hand slipping under Richard's back as he writhed in pain. If you'd pulled it out, he'd be dead by now. But you can heal him? It sounded more a plea than a question. Nikki didn't answer. You can heal him. That time the words hissed out through gritted teeth. At the tone of command, born of frayed patience, Richard realized that it was Kara. He hadn't had time to tell her before the attack. Surely she would have to know. But if she knew, then why didn't she say? Why didn't she put him at ease? If it hadn't been for him, we'd have been taken by surprise, said a man standing off to the side. He saved us all when he waylaid those soldiers sneaking up on us. You have to help him, another man insisted. Nikki impatiently waved her arm. All of you get out. This place is small enough as it is. I can't afford the distraction right now. I need some quiet. Lightning flashed again, as if the good spirits intended to deny her what she needed. Thunder boomed with a deep, resonant threat of the storm closing around them. You'll send Kara out when you know something? One of the men asked.
Yes, yes, go.
And make sure there aren't any more soldiers around to surprise us, Kara added. Keep out of sight in case there are. We can't afford to be discovered here. Not right now. Men swore to do her bidding. Hazy light spilled across a dingy plastered wall when the door opened. As the men departed, their shadows ghosted through the patch of light, like the good spirits themselves abandoning him. On his way by, one of the men briefly touched Richard's shoulder, an offer of comfort and courage. Richard vaguely recognized the face. He hadn't seen these men for quite a while. The thought occurred to him that this was no way to have a reunion. The light vanished as the men pulled the door closed behind themselves, leaving the room in the gloom of light coming from the single window. Nikki, Kara pressed in a low voice, you can heal him? Richard had been on his way to meet up with Nikki when troops sent to put down the uprising against the brutal rule of the Imperial Order had accidentally come upon his secluded camp. His first thought, just before the soldiers had blundered upon him, had been that he had to find Nikki. A spark of hope flared down into the darkness of his frantic worry. Nikki could help him. Now, Richard needed to get her to listen. As she leaned close, her hand sliding around under him, apparently trying to see how close the arrow came to penetrating all the way through his back, Richard managed to clutch her black dress at the shoulder. He saw that his hand glistened with blood. He felt more running back across his face when he coughed. Her blue eyes turned to him.
Everything will be all right, Richard. Lie still.
A skein of blonde hair slipped forward over her other shoulder as he tried to pull her closer.
I'm here. Calm down. I won't leave you. Lie still. It's all right. I'm going to help you.
Despite how smoothly she covered it, panic lurked in her voice. Despite her reassuring smile, her eyes glistened with tears. He knew then that his wound might very well be beyond her ability to heal. That only made it all the more important that he get her to listen. Richard opened his mouth, trying to speak. He couldn't seem to get enough air. He shivered with cold, each breath a struggle that produced little more than a wet rattle. He couldn't die. Not here, not now. Tears stung his eyes. Nikki gently pressed him back down. Lord Rawl, Kara said, lie still, please. She took his hand from its hold on Nikki's dress and held it against herself in a tight grip. Nikki will take care of you. You'll be fine. Just lie still and let her do what she needs to do to heal you. Where Nikki's blonde hair was loose and flowing, Kara's was woven into a single braid. Despite how concerned he knew her to be, Richard could see in Kara's posture only her powerful presence, and in her features and her iron blue eyes, her strength of will. Right then, that strength, that self-assurance, was solid ground for him in the quicksand of terror. The arrow doesn't go all the way through, Nikki told Kara as she pulled her hand out from under his back.
I told you so. He managed to at least deflect it with his sword. That's good, isn't it? It's better that it didn't pierce his back as well, isn't it?
No, Nikki said under her breath.
No? Kara leaned closer to Nikki. But how can it be worse that it didn't rip through his back as well?
Nikki glanced up at Kara. It's a crossbow bolt. If it were sticking out his back or close enough to need only to be pushed just a little more, we could break off the barbed head and pull the shaft back out.
She left unsaid what they would now have to do.
His bleeding isn't as bad, Kara offered. We've stopped that at least.
Maybe on the outside, Nikki said in a confidential tone, but he is bleeding into his chest. Blood is filling his left lung.
This time it was Kara who snatched a fistful of Nikki's dress. But you're going to do something. You're going to...
Of course, Nikki growled as she pulled her shoulder free of Kara's grip.
Richard gasped in pain. The rising waters of panic threatened to overwhelm him. Nikki laid her other hand on his chest to hold him still as well as to offer comfort.
Kara, Nikki said, why don't you wait outside with the others?
That isn't going to happen. You'd best just get on with it.
Nikki appraised Kara's eyes briefly, then leaned in and again grasped the shaft jutting from Richard's chest. He felt the probing tingle of magic follow the course of the arrow down deep inside him. Richard recognized the unique feel of Nikki's power, much as he could recognize her singular silken voice. He knew that there was no time to delay in what he had to do. Once she started, there was no telling how long it would be until he woke. If he woke. With all his effort, Richard lunged, seizing her dress at the collar. He pulled himself close to her face, pulled her down toward him so she could hear him. He had to ask if they knew where Kaylin was. If they didn't, then he had to ask Nikki to help him find her. The only thing he could get out was the single word.
Kaylin!
He whispered with all his strength.
All right, Richard, all right. Nikki gripped his wrists and pulled his hands off her dress. Listen to me.
She pressed him back down against the table.
Listen, there's no time. You have to calm down. Be still, just relax and let me do the work.
She brushed back his hair and laid a gentle, caring hand to his forehead as her other hand again grasped the cursed arrow. Richard desperately struggled to say no, struggled to tell them that they needed to find Kaylin, but already the tingle of magic was intensifying into paralyzing pain. Richard went rigid with the agony of the power lancing into his chest. He could see Nikki and Kara's faces above him. And then a deadly darkness ignited within the room. He had been healed by Nikki before. Richard knew the feel of her power. This time, something was different. Dangerously different.
Kara gasped. What are you doing?
What I must if I'm to save him. It's the only way.
But you can't.
If you'd rather I let him slip into the arms of death, then say so. Otherwise, let me do as I must to keep him among us.
Kara studied Nikki's heated expression for only a moment before letting out a noisy breath and nodding.
Richard reached for Nikki's wrist. But Kara caught his fist and pressed it back to the table. His fingers came to rest on the woven gold wire spelling out the word truth on the hilt of his sword. He spoke Kaylin's name again, but this time no sound would cross his lips. Kara frowned as she leaned toward Nikki.
Did you hear what it was he said?
I don't know, some name, Kaylin, I think.
Richard tried to cry, yes, but it came out as little more than a hoarse moan.
Kaylin? Kara asked.
Who's Kaylin?
I have no idea.
Nikki murmured as her concentration returned to the task at hand. He's obviously in delirium from loss of blood. Richard truly couldn't draw a breath against the pain that suddenly screamed through him. Lightning flashed and thunder pealed again, this time unleashing a torrent of rain that began to drum against the roof. Against his will, hazy darkness drew in around the faces. Richard managed only to whisper Kaylin's name one last time before Nikki opened into him the full flood of magic. The world dissolved into nothingness. Chapter 2.
The distant howl of a wolf woke Richard from a dead sleep. The forlorn cry echoed through the mountains but went unanswered. Richard lay on his side in the surreal light of false dawn, idly listening, waiting for a return cry that never came. Try as he might, he couldn't seem to open his eyes for longer than the span of a single slow heartbeat, much less gather the energy to lift his head. Shadowy tree limbs appeared to move about in the murky darkness. It was odd that such an ordinary sound as the distant howl of a wolf should wake him. He remembered that Kara had third watch. She would no doubt come to wake them soon enough. With great effort, he summoned the strength to roll over. He needed to touch Kaelin, to embrace her, to go back to sleep with her in his protective arms for a few more delicious minutes. His hand found only an expanse of empty ground. Kaelin wasn't there. Where was she? Where had she gone off to? Perhaps she'd awakened early and gone to talk to Kara. Richard sat up. He instinctively checked to make sure that his sword was at hand. The reassuring feel of the polished scabbard and wire-wound hilt greeted his fingers. The sword lay on the ground beside him. Richard heard the soft whisper of a slow, steady rain. He remembered that for some reason he needed it not to rain. But if it was raining, then why didn't he feel it? Why was his face dry? Why was the ground dry? He sat up, rubbing his eyes, trying to get his bearings, trying to clear his foggy mind as he fought to herd together scattered thoughts. He peered into the darkness and realized that he wasn't outside. In the faint gray light of dawn coming in through a single small window, he saw that he was in a derelict room. The place smelled of wet wood and damp decay. Dying embers glowed deep within the ash in a hearth set into a plastered wall rising up before him. A blackened wooden spoon hung to one side of the hearth. A mostly bald broom leaned against the other side. But other than that, he saw no personal items to distinguish the people who lived there. Daybreak looked to be still some time off. The incessant patter of the rain against the roof promised that there would be no sun this chilly and damp day. Besides dripping through several holes in the tattered roof, rain leaked in around the chimney, adding yet another layer of stain to the dingy plaster. Seeing the plastered wall, the hearth, and the heavy plank table brought back spectral fragments of memories. Driven by his need to know where Kaelin was, Richard staggered to his feet, clutching at the lingering pain in the left side of his chest with one hand and the edge of the table with his other. At hearing him stand in the dimly lit room, Kara, leaning back in a chair not far away, shot to her feet. "Lord Rahl!" He saw his sword lying on the table. But he had thought. "Lord Rahl, you are awake." In the somber light, Richard could see that Kara looked exuberant. He also saw that she was wearing her red leather.
"A wolf howled and woke me."
Kara shook her head. "I've been sitting right there, awake, watching over you. No wolf howled. You must have dreamed it." Her smile returned. "You look better." He recalled not being able to breathe, not being able to get enough air. He took an experimental deep breath and found that it came easily. While the ghost of terrible pain still haunted him, the reality of it had nearly faded away.
"Yes, I think I'm all right."
Short, disjointed memories flashed in fits before his mind's eye. He remembered standing alone and still in the eerie early light as the dark tide of Imperial Order soldiers flooded through the trees. He remembered bits of their wild charge, their raised weapons. He remembered releasing himself into the fluid dance with death. He remembered, too, the hail of arrows and bolts from crossbows, and finally, other men joining the battle. Richard lifted the front of his shirt, out away from himself, looking down at it, not understanding why it was whole. "Your shirt was ruined," Kara offered, noticing his puzzlement. "We washed and shaved you, then we put a clean shirt on you." "We." That one word rose up above all others in his mind. "We, Kara and Kaelin." That had to be what Kara meant.
"Where is she?"
"Who?"
"Kaelin,"
he said as he took a stride away from the support of the table.
"Where is she?"
"Kaelin?" Kara's features meandered into a provocative smile. Who's Kalin?
Richard sighed with relief. Kara would not be needling him in such a way if Kalin were hurt or in any kind of trouble. That much he knew for certain. An overwhelming sense of relief purged his dread, and with it some of his weariness. Kalin was safe. He couldn't help being cheered, too, by Kara's impish expression. He loved to see her with a light-hearted smile, in part because it was such a rare sight. Usually, when a moored Sith smiled, it was a menacing prelude to something wholly unpleasant. The same was true when they wore their red leather. Kalin, Richard said, playing along. You know, my wife, where is she? Kara's nose wrinkled with seldom-seen feminine mirth. Such an extraordinary look was so uncommon on Kara that it not only surprised him, but spurred him into a grin. A wife, she drawled, turning coy. Now, there's a novel concept, the Lord Rawl taking a wife. That he found himself to be the Lord Rawl, the leader of Dahara, at times still seemed unreal to him. It was not the kind of thing a woods guide growing up in far-off Westland would ever have dreamed up in his wildest imaginings. Yes, well, one of us had to be the first. He wiped a hand across his face, still trying to clear the web of sleep from his mind. Where is she? Kara's smile widened. Kalin. She tilted her head toward him, arching one brow. Your wife. Yes, Kalin, my wife, Richard said offhandedly. He had long ago learned that it was best not to give Kara the satisfaction of seeing her mischievous antics get to him. You remember her, intelligent green eyes, tall, long hair, and of course the most beautiful woman I've ever laid eyes on. The leather of Kara's outfit creaked as she straightened her back and folded her arms. You mean the most beautiful besides me, of course. Her eyes were luminous when she smiled. He didn't rise to the bait. Well, Kara finally said with a sigh, the Lord Rawl certainly seems to have had an interesting dream during his long sleep. Long sleep? You've been asleep for 2 days after Nikki healed you. Richard raked his fingers back through his dirty, matted hair. 2 days, he said as he tried to reconcile his fragmented memories. He was becoming annoyed with Kara's game. So where is she? Your wife. Yes, my wife. Richard planted his fists on his hips as he leaned toward the irksome woman. You know, the Mother Confessor. Mother Confessor? My, Lord Rawl. But when you dream, you certainly do dream big. Smart, beautiful, and the Mother Confessor as well. Kara leaned in with a taunting look. And no doubt she's also madly in love with you. Kara. Oh, wait! She held up a hand to stop him as she abruptly turned serious. Nikki said that she wanted me to go get her if you woke. She was really insistent about it, said that if you woke, she needed to have a look at you. Kara started toward the single closed door at the back of the room. She's only been asleep for a couple of hours, but she'll want to know that you're awake. Kara was in the back room for no more than a moment when Nikki burst out of the darkness, pausing briefly to grasp the doorframe. Richard! Before Richard could say anything, Nikki, her eyes wide with relief at seeing him alive, dashed to him and seized his shoulders, as if she thought he were a good spirit come to the world of the living, and only her firm grip would keep him there. I was so worried. How are you feeling? She looked as drained as he felt. Her mane of blonde hair hadn't been brushed out, and it looked like she'd been sleeping in her black dress. Even so, the contrast of her disheveled appearance only served to highlight her exquisite beauty. Well, all right, for the most part, except that I feel exhausted and lightheaded despite having had what Kara tells me was quite a long sleep. Nikki dismissively waved a slender hand. That's to be expected. With rest, you will have your full strength back soon enough. You lost a lot of blood. It will take time for your body to recover. Nikki, I need... Hush, she said, as she put one hand behind his neck and pressed the flat of her other to his chest. Her smooth brow drew together in concentration. Though she appeared to be about his age, or at most only a year or two older, she had lived a very long time as a sister of the light at the Palace of the Prophets,
where those within the walls aged differently. Nikki's graceful manner, the keen appraisal of her blue eyes, and her singular subdued smile, always delivered with her knowing gaze locked on his, had been at first distracting, and then unsettling, but was now merely familiar. Richard winced as he felt Nikki's power tingling deep into his chest between her hands. It was a disconcerting penetration. It made his heart flutter. A mild wave of nausea coursed through him.
"It's holding," Nikki murmured to herself.
She looked up into his eyes then.
"The vessels are whole and strong."
The look of wonder in her eyes betrayed how uncertain she had been of success. Some of her reassuring smile returned.
"You still need to rest, but you're doing well, Richard. You really are."
He nodded, relieved to hear that he was healthy, even if she sounded a little surprised by it. But his other concerns needed to be put to rest as well. "Nikki, where's Kaylin? Kara's in one of her moods this morning and won't say." Nikki looked to be at a loss.
"Who?"
Richard took hold of her wrist and removed her hand from his chest.
"What's wrong? Is she hurt? Where is she?"
Kara tilted her head toward Nikki.
"While he slept, Lord Rawl dreamed himself up a wife."
Nikki turned an astonished frown on Kara.
"A wife?
Remember the name he called out when he was delirious?"
Kara flashed a conspiratorial smile. "That's the one he married in his dream. She's beautiful and smart, of course."
"Beautiful,"
Nikki blinked at the woman.
"And smart."
Kara cocked an eyebrow.
"And she's the Mother Confessor."
Nikki looked incredulous.
"The Mother Confessor?"
"Enough," Richard said, as he released Nikki's wrist. "I mean it now. Where is she?"
It was immediately apparent to both women that his indulgent sense of humor had evaporated. The intensity in his voice, to say nothing of his glare, gave them pause.
"Richard," Nikki said in a cautious tone, "you were hurt pretty bad. For a time I didn't think..."
She hooked a stray strand of hair behind her ear and started over.
"Look, when a person is hurt as seriously as you were, it can play tricks with their mind. It's only natural. I've seen it before. When you were shot with that arrow, you couldn't breathe. Not getting air, like you're drowning, causes..."
"What's the matter with you two? What's going on?"
Richard couldn't understand why they were stalling. His heart felt as if it were galloping out of control.
"Is she hurt? Tell me."
"Richard,"
Nikki said in a calm voice, obviously meant to settle him down, "the bolt from that crossbow came perilously close to going right through your heart. If it had, there wouldn't have been anything I could have done. I can't raise the dead." "Even though it missed your heart, the arrow still did serious damage. People just don't survive a wound as grave as you had. I wouldn't have been able to heal you in the conventional manner, because it couldn't be done. There was no time to even try to get the arrow out in any other way. You were bleeding inside. I had to..."
She faltered as she stared up into his eyes.
Richard bent down a little toward her.
"You had to what?"
Nikki shrugged one shoulder self-consciously.
"I had to use subtractive magic."
Nikki was a powerful sorceress in her own right, but she was infinitely more exceptional in that she was able to wield underworld forces as well. She had once been committed to those forces. She had once been known as Death's Mistress. Healing was not exactly her specialty. Richard's caution flared.
"Why?"
"To get the arrow out of you."
"You eliminated the arrow with subtractive magic?"
"There was no time and no other way."
She again clasped his shoulders, although more compassionately this time.
"If I hadn't done something, you would have been dead in mere moments. I had to."
Richard glanced to Kara's grim expression and then back to Nikki.
"Well, I guess that makes sense."
At least it sounded like it made sense. He didn't really know if it did or not. Having been raised in the vast woods of Westland, Richard didn't know a great deal about magic.
"And some of your blood,"
Nikki added in a low voice. He didn't like the sound of that.
"What?"
"You were bleeding into your chest. One lung had already failed. I was able to perceive that your heart was being forced out of place. The major arteries were in danger of being ripped apart from the pressure. I needed the blood out of the way in order to heal you, so that your lungs and heart could work properly. They were failing. You were in a state of shock and delirium. You were near death. Nikki's blue eyes brimmed with tears. I was so afraid, Richard. There was no one but me to help you, and I was so afraid that I would fail. Even after I did everything I could to heal you, I still wasn't sure you would ever wake again. Richard could see the toll of that fear in her expression and feel it in the way her fingers trembled on his arms. It spoke to how far she had come since she had given up her belief in the cause of the Sisters of the Dark and then the Imperial Order. The haunted look on Kara's face confirmed for him the truth of how desperate the situation had been. For all the sleep he'd apparently gotten, neither of them appeared to have had much more than brief naps. It must have been a frightening vigil. The rain drummed without let-up against the roof. Other than that, the dank husk of a house was dead quiet. Life seemed all the more fleeting in the abandoned home. The forsaken place gave Richard the chills. You saved my life, Nikki. I remember being afraid I was going to die, but you saved my life. He touched his fingertips to her cheek. Thank you. I wish there was a better way to say it, a better way to tell you how much I appreciate what you did, but I can't think of any. Nikki's small smile and simple nod told him that she grasped the depth of his sincerity. Another thought struck him. Do you mean to say that using subtractive magic caused some kind of problem? No, no, Richard. Nikki squeezed his arms, as if to allay his fears. No, I don't think that it caused any harm. What do you mean you don't think it did? She hesitated a moment before explaining. I've never done anything like that before. I've never even heard of it being done. Dear spirits, I didn't even know that it could be done. As I'm sure you can imagine, using subtractive magic in such a way is risky, to put it mildly. Anything living touched by it would also be destroyed. I had to use the core of the arrow itself as a pathway into you. I was as careful as I could possibly be that I only eliminated the arrow and the spent blood. Richard wondered what happened to things when subtractive magic was used. What would have happened to his blood? But his head was already spinning with the story, and he most wanted her to get to the point. But between all that, Nikki added, between the massive loss of blood, the injury, the dire condition of not being able to get enough air, the stress you underwent while I used regular additive magic to heal you, to say nothing of the unknown element that subtractive magic added into the mix, you were going through an experience that can only be described as unpredictable. Such a terrible crisis can cause unexpected things to happen. Richard didn't know what she was getting at. What unexpected things? There's no telling. I had no choice but to use extreme methods. You were beyond what I thought were all limits. You have to try to understand that you were not yourself there for a while. Kara hooked a thumb behind her red leather belt. Nikki is right, Lord Rawl. You weren't yourself. You were fighting us. I had to hold you down just so she could help you. I've stood over men at the cusp of death. Strange things happen when they're in that place. Believe me, you were there a long time into that first night. Richard knew very well what she meant when she said that she had stood over men on the cusp of death. The profession of Mord Sith had been torture. At least it had been until he changed all that. He carried the Aegil of Denna, the Mord Sith who had once stood over him in that capacity. She had given him her Aegil as a solemn gift in gratitude for freeing her from the madness of her terrible duty, even though she had known that the price of that freedom was to be his sword through her heart. Right then, Richard felt a very long way from the peaceful woods where he'd grown up. Nikki spread her hands as if imploring him to try harder to understand. You were unconscious and then asleep for quite a time. I had to revive you enough to get you to drink water and a broth, but I needed you to stay in a deep sleep so that you could begin to recover your strength. I had to use a spell to keep you in that state. You'd lost a lot of blood. Had I allowed you to awake too soon, it would have sapped your tenuous strength, and you still could have slipped away from us. Died. That was what she meant. He could have died. Richard took a deep breath. He'd had no idea of everything that had gone on over the last 3 days. He basically recalled the battle and then waking when he heard the wolf howl. "Nikki," he said, trying to show her that he could be calm and understanding even though he felt neither, "what does this have to do with Kaylin?" Her features were set in an uneasy mix of empathy and disquiet.
"Richard, this woman Kaylin is just a product of your mind when you were in that confused state of shock and delirium before I could heal you."
"Nikki, I wasn't imagining."
"You were at the brink of death," she said as she held up a hand, commanding silence and for him to listen. "In your mind, you were grasping for someone to help you, someone like this person, Kaylin. Please believe me when I say that it's understandable, but you're awake now and must face the truth. She was a figment born of your dire condition."
Richard was dumbfounded to hear her even suggesting such a thing. He turned to Kara, imploring her to come to her senses, if not his rescue. "How could you possibly think such a thing? How could you believe it? Haven't you ever had a dream where you were terrified and then your long-dead mother was there, alive, and she was going to help you?"
Kara's unblinking blue eyes seemed focused elsewhere. "Don't you remember waking after such dreams and feeling sure that it had been real, that your mother was alive again, really alive, and that she was going to help you? Don't you remember how much you wanted to cling to that feeling? Don't you remember how desperately you wanted it to be real?"
Nikki lightly touched the place where the arrow had been, where his flesh was now whole.
"After I'd healed you to the point that you were past the worst of the crisis, you went into a long dreaming state of sleep. You carried these desperate illusions forward with you. You dreamed about them, added to them, lived with them longer than any ordinary sleep. This prolonged dream, this comforting illusion, this divine longing had time to seep into every corner of your thoughts, saturate every part of your mind, and become real to you, just as Kara says. But because of the length of time you were asleep, it gained even more power. Now that you've only just come awake from that protracted sleep, you are merely having a little trouble filtering out what part of your ordeal was a dream and what was real."
"Nikki is right, Lord Rawl." Richard couldn't remember Kara ever looking so dead serious. "You just dreamed it, like you dreamed that you heard a wolf howl. It sounds like a nice dream, this woman you dreamed you married. But that's all it is, a dream."
Richard's mind reeled. The concept of Kaylin being nothing more than a dream, a figment of his imagination born in his delirium, was, at its core, terrifying. That terror stormed unchecked through him. If what they were saying was true, then he didn't want to be awake. If it was true, then he wished that Nikki had never healed him. He didn't want to live in a world where Kaylin wasn't real. He groped for solid ground in a sea of dark disorder, too stunned to think of a way to fight such a shapeless threat. He felt confused by his ordeal and that he didn't remember much of it. His certainty in what he regarded as truth began to crumble. He caught himself. He knew better than to believe a fear and thus give it life. While he could not fathom how they'd latched onto such a monstrous idea, he knew that Kaylin wasn't a dream. After all that you've both shared with her, how can you two possibly say that Kaylin is just a dream?
"How indeed," Nikki asked, "if what you're saying were true?"
"Lord Rawl, we would never be so cruel as to try to deceive you about something so important to you."
Richard blinked at them. Could it be?
He frantically tried to imagine if there was any possibility that what they were saying could be true. His fists tightened.
"Stop it, both of you!"
It was a plea for a return of sanity. He hadn't meant for it to come out as threatening, but it did. Nikki took half a step back. Kara's face lost a little of its color.
Richard couldn't slow his breathing, his racing heart. "I don't remember my dreams."
He looked at each of them in turn. "Not since I was little. I don't remember any dreams while I was hurt or while I slept. None. Dreams are meaningless. Kaylin is not. Don't do this to me, please.
This isn't helping anything. It's only making it worse. Please, if something has happened to Kaylin, I need to know.
That had to be it. Something had happened to her, and they just didn't think he was strong enough yet to handle the news. A worse fear by far welled up when he recalled Nikki saying that she couldn't raise the dead. Could they be trying to shield him from that? He gritted his teeth with the effort not to scream at them, to keep his voice level and in control. Where is Kaylin? Nikki cautiously dipped her head as if beseeching his forgiveness.
Richard, she is just in your mind. I know that such things can seem very real, but it's not. You dreamed her up while you were hurt. Nothing more.
I did not dream up Kaylin. He again turned his plea to the Mord Sith.
Kara, you've been with us for more than 2 years. You've fought with us, fought for us. Back when Nikki was a sister of the dark and she brought me down here to the old world, you stood in for me and protected Kaylin. She has protected you. You've shared and endured things that most people could never even imagine. You've become friends.
He gestured to her Ajeel, the weapon that looked like nothing more than a short, thin red leather rod hanging by a thin gold chain from her right wrist.
You even named Kaylin a sister of the Ajeel.
Kara stood stiff and mute. Kara's conferring on Kaylin the title of Sister of the Ajeel had been an informal but deeply solemn accolade. From a former mortal enemy to a woman she had come to respect and trust.
Kara, you may have started out as a protector to the Lord Rol, but you've become more than that to Kaylin and me. You've become like family.
Kara would willingly and without hesitation sacrifice her life to protect Richard. She was not only ruthless, but fearless in her defense of him. The one thing Kara did fear was disappointing him. That fear was clearly evident in her eyes.
Thank you, Lord Rol,
she finally said in a meek voice, for including me in your wonderful dream. Richard's flesh prickled as a wave of cold dread washed up through him. Overwhelmed, he pressed his hand to his forehead, pushing back his hair. These two women were not inventing some story for fear of telling him bad news. They were telling him the truth. The truth as they saw it, anyway. The truth somehow twisted into a nightmare. He couldn't make any of it work in his mind, couldn't make any sense of it. After all they had shared with Kaylin, all they had been through with her, all their time together, it was impossible for him to understand how these two women could be saying this to him. And yet they were. Although he couldn't conceive of the cause, something was obviously and dreadfully wrong. A suffocating sense of foreboding settled over him. It felt as if the whole world had been turned upside down, and now he couldn't make the pieces fit back together. He had to do something. What he had been about to do just before the soldiers had attacked them. Maybe it wasn't too late. Chapter 3. Richard knelt beside his bedroll and started jamming clothes into his pack. The cold drizzle he could see through the small window didn't look like it would be ending anytime soon, so he left his cloak out.
"What do you think you're doing?" Nikki asked.
He spotted a cake of soap lying nearby and snatched it up. "What does it look like I'm doing?"
He had already lost far too much time. He'd lost days. There was no time to waste. He shoved the cake of soap, packets of dried herbs and spices, and a pouch of dried apricots down into the pack before quickly furling his bedroll. Kara abandoned questioning or objecting and instead set about packing her own things.
"That's not what I mean, and you know it."
Nikki squatted down beside him and took hold of his arm, pulling him around to look at her.
"Richard, you can't leave. You need to rest. I told you, you lost a lot of blood. You aren't strong enough yet to go running off chasing phantoms."
He stifled an indignant reply and yanked tight a leather thong around his bedroll.
"I feel fine."
He didn't, of course, but he felt good enough.
Nikki had just spent days of intense effort saving his life.
Besides being worried for him, she was exhausted and probably wasn't thinking clearly.
All of those things likely contributed to her believing he was acting irresponsibly. Still, he bristled that she didn't give him more credit. Nikki insistently gripped a fistful of his shirt as he cinched the second thong tight.
You don't yet realize how weak you really are, Richard. You're jeopardizing your life. You need to rest in order for your body to be able to recover. You haven't had nearly enough time to build your strength.
And how much time does Kaylin have?
He seized Nikki's upper arm and in heated frustration pulled her close.
She's out there somewhere in trouble. You don't realize it. Kara doesn't realize it, but I do. Do you think I can just lie around here when the person I love more than anything in the world is in peril? If it were you in trouble, Nikki, would you wish me to so easily give up on you? Wouldn't you want me to try? I don't know what's gone wrong, but something has. If I'm right, and I am, then I can't even begin to guess at the implications or imagine the consequences.
What do you mean?
Well, if you're right, then I'm just imagining things out of my dreams. But if I'm right, and since it's pretty obvious that you and Kara couldn't both be sharing the same mental disorder, that would have to mean that whatever is happening has a cause that isn't benevolent. I can't afford to delay and risk everything while I try to convince you of the seriousness of the situation. Too much time has already been lost. Too much is at stake.
Nikki looked too startled by the notion to speak. Richard released her and turned back to fasten down the flap on his pack. He didn't have the time to try to solve the puzzle of whatever was going on with Nikki and Kara. Nikki finally found her voice.
Richard, don't you see what you're doing? You're beginning to invent absurd notions in order to justify what you want to believe. You said it yourself. Kara and I can't both be sharing the same disorder of the mind. Stay and rest. We can try to discover the nature of this dream that has taken such strong root in your mind and hopefully set it right. I probably caused it with something I did when I was trying to heal you. If so, I'm sorry. Please, Richard, stay for now.
She was focused only on what she saw as the problem. Zed, his grandfather, the man who had helped raise him, had often said as Richard was growing up, "Don't think of the problem, think of the solution." The solution he needed to concentrate on now was how to find Kaylin before it was too late. He wished he had Zed's help to find the solution to where she was.
You aren't out of serious danger yet, Nikki insisted as she dodged drips of rainwater trickling through holes in the roof. Pushing yourself too hard could be fatal.
I understand, I really do.
Richard checked the knife he wore at his belt and then slipped it back into its sheath. I don't intend to ignore your advice. I'll take it as easy as I can.
Richard, listen to me,
Nikki said, rubbing her fingers against her temple as if her head was aching.
It's more than that alone.
She paused to run her hand back over her hair as she searched for the words.
You aren't invincible. You may carry that sword, but it can't always protect you. Your ancestors, every lord role before you, despite their mastery of the gift, still kept bodyguards close at hand. You may have been born with the gift, but even if you were competent in its use, such power is no assurance of protection. Especially not now. That arrow only served to show how vulnerable you really are. You may be an important man, Richard, but you are just a man. We all need you. We all so desperately need you.
Richard looked away from the anguish in Nikki's blue eyes. He knew very well how vulnerable he was. Life was his highest value. He didn't take it for granted. He almost never objected to Kara being close at hand. She and the rest of the Mord Sith, as well as other bodyguards he seemed to have inherited, had proven their worth more than once. But that didn't mean that he was helpless or that he could allow caution to prevent him from doing what was necessary. More than that, though, he grasped Nikki's larger meaning. He had learned while at the Palace of the Prophets that the Sisters of the Light believed that he was deeply enmeshed in ancient prophecy, that he was a central figure around whom events revolved. According to the sisters, if their side was to prevail over the dark forces arrayed against them, it would only be if Richard led them to victory. Prophecy said that without him, all would be lost. Their prelate, Annalena, had spent a great deal of her life manipulating events to make sure that he survived to grow up and lead them in this war. Anne's hope for everything they held dear, to hear her tell it, rested on his shoulders. At least Kaelin had thankfully taken the fire out of Anne in that regard. He knew, though, that many others still held the same view. He knew, too, that his leadership had galvanized a great many people who longed to simply live free. Richard had been down in the vaults at the Palace of the Prophets, and had seen some of the most important and well-guarded books of prophecy in existence. He had to admit that some of it was pretty uncanny. Nevertheless, his experience had been that prophecy seemed to say whatever it was people wanted it to say. He had personal experience with prophecy involving Kaelin and himself, especially those prophecies of Shota, the witch woman. As far as he was concerned, prophecy had proven itself to be of little value and great trouble. Richard forced a smile. "Nikki, you're sounding like a sister of the light." She didn't look to be amused. "Carl will be with me," he said, trying to ease her mind. He realized after he'd said it that having Carl with him hadn't stopped the arrow that had taken him down. Come to think of it, where had she been during the battle? He didn't remember her being there with him. Carl didn't fear a fight. A team of horses couldn't drag her away from protecting him. Surely she must have been close beside him, but he just didn't recall seeing her. He picked up his big leather overbelt and fastened it around his waist. He had gotten the belt and other parts of the outfit, which had once belonged to a great wizard, from the Wizard's Keep, where Zed now stood guard, protecting the keep from Emperor Jagang and his horde from the old world. Nikki heaved an impatient sigh, a glimpse of a stern and implacable side of her that Richard knew all too well. He knew, though, that this time it was powered by sincere concern for his well-being. "Richard, we simply can't afford this distraction. There are important things we need to talk about. That's why I was coming to you in the first place. Didn't you get the letter I sent?" Richard paused. "Letter. Letter. Yes," he said, at last remembering. "I did get your letter. I sent word to you with the soldier Kaelin had touched with her power." Richard caught Kara's brief glance up at Nikki, a surprised look that said she didn't recall any such thing. Nikki appraised him with an unreadable look. "The word you sent never found me." Somewhat surprised, Richard gestured toward the new world. His primary mission was to go north and assassinate Emperor Jagang. He was touched by a confessor's power. He would die before ever abandoning her command. If he couldn't find you, he would have gone after Jagang. I suppose it's also possible that something happened to him first. There are perils enough in the old world. The look on Nikki's face made him feel like he had just offered her further evidence that he was losing his mind. "Do you honestly think, even in your wildest imaginings, that the Dreamwalker can be so easily eliminated?" "No, of course not." He pushed the bulge of a cooking pot in his pack back into place. "We expected that the soldier would probably be killed in the attempt. We sent him after Jagang because he was a murdering thug and deserved to die, but I also thought that there was a possibility that he might succeed. Even if he didn't, I wanted Jagang to at least lose some sleep knowing that any of his men could be assassins." He could see by Nikki's too calm expression that she thought that this, too, was no more than part of his elaborate delusion about a woman he had dreamed. Richard recalled then what else had happened. "Nikki, I'm afraid that shortly after Sabar delivered your letter, we were attacked. He died in that fight." A furtive glance to Kara brought a nod in confirmation. "Dear spirits," Nikki said in sorrow at hearing the news about young Sabar. Richard shared her sentiment. He remembered Nikki's urgent warning in the letter about how Jagang had started to create weapons out of gifted people, as had been done 3,000 years before in the Great War. It was a frightening development that had been thought impossible, but Jagang had discovered a way to accomplish the task by using the Sisters of the Dark he held captive. During the attack on their camp, Nikki's letter had been knocked into the fire. Richard hadn't had the chance to read the whole letter before it had been destroyed. He'd read enough, though, to understand the danger. When he made for the table where his sword lay, Nikki stepped in front of him.
"Richard, I know it's hard, but you have to put this dream business behind you. We don't have time for it. We need to talk. If you got my letter, then at least you know that you can't..."
"Nikki," Richard said, silencing her, "I must do this." He laid a hand on her shoulder and spoke as patiently as he could, considering his sense of urgency, but by his tone let her know that he was not going to discuss it further. "If you come with us, then we can talk later, when there is time and it doesn't interfere with what I need to do, but right now I don't have the time, and neither does Galen." Pressing the back of his hand against the side of her shoulder, Richard moved her aside and strode to the table. As he lifted his sword by its polished scabbard, he briefly wondered why. When he had heard the wolf howl and he woke up, he'd thought that the sword had been laying on the ground beside him. Maybe he had remembered a fragment of a dream. Impatient to get going, he dismissed it. He slipped the ancient tooled leather baldric over his head and quickly adjusted the scabbard at his left hip, making sure it was securely fastened. With two fingers, he lifted the sword by the down-swept crossguard, not only to be sure that it was clear in its sheath, but to check that the blade was sound. He couldn't remember everything that had happened in the fight, and he didn't recall putting the sword away himself. The polished steel gleamed through a film of dried blood. Fragmented memories of the battle flashed through his mind. It had been sudden and unexpected, but once he had pulled the sword free in anger, unexpected no longer mattered. Being so heavily outnumbered, though, had mattered. He understood all too well that Nikki was right about him not being invincible. Not long after he'd met Kalin, Zed, in his capacity as first wizard, had named Richard to the post of Seeker and had given him the sword. Richard had hated the weapon because of what he mistakenly thought it represented. Zed told him that the Sword of Truth, as it was named, was but a tool, and that it was the intent of the individual wielding a sword that gave it meaning. That had never been so true as it was with this particular weapon. The sword was now bonded to Richard, bonded to his intent, driven by his purpose. From the beginning, his intent and purpose had been to protect those he loved and cared about. To do that, he had come to realize that he had to help shape a world in which they could live in safety and peace. It was that intent that gave the sword meaning for him. The steel hissed as he slid it back into its scabbard. His intent now was to find Kalin. If the sword could help him accomplish that goal, then he would not hesitate to put it to use. He hoisted his pack and swung it around, settling it onto its familiar place on his back, as he scanned the nearly barren room for any of his things he might have missed. On the floor beside the hearth, he saw dried meat and travel biscuits. Beside them lay other bundled foodstuffs. Richard's and Kara's simple wooden bowls were there as well, one with broth and the other holding the remnants of porridge. "Kara," he said as he swept up three water skins and hung their straps around his neck, "be sure to get all the food that can travel and bring it along. Don't forget the bowls." Kara nodded. She packed methodically now that she realized he had no intention of leaving her behind. Nikki caught his sleeve. "Richard, I mean it. We have to talk. It's important." "Then do as I asked. Get your things and come with me." He snatched up his bow and quiver. "You can talk all you want as long as you don't hold me up." With a nod of resignation, Nikki finally abandoned her arguments and rushed to the back room to gather her own things. Far from minding having Nikki along, Richard wanted her help. Her gift might be useful in finding Kalin. In fact, finding Nikki so she could help him had been his intention when he first awoke before the attack and realized that Kalin was missing. Richard threw his hooded forest cloak around his shoulders and headed for the door. Kara looked up from beside the hearth, where she hurried to finish collecting her gear, and gave him a nod to let him know she'd be right behind him. He could see Nikki in the back room rushing to get her things before he got far. In his urgent need to find Kalin, Richard's imagination was beginning to get the better of him. He could see her hurt, see her in pain. The thought of Kalin somewhere alone and in trouble made his heart quicken with dread. Against his will, the crushing memory of the time she had been beaten nearly to death flooded forth. He had given up everything else and had taken her far away back into the mountains where no one could find them, so that she would be safe and could have time to heal. That summer, after she had started to recover her strength and before Nicky had shown up to capture him and take him away, had been one of the best summers of his life. How Kara could forget that special time was incomprehensible to him. From force of habit, he lifted his sword to make sure it was clear in its scabbard before he threw open the simple plank door. Damp air and iron-gray morning light greeted him. Water collected by the roof dripped from the eaves, splashing back against his boots. Cold drizzle prickled against his face. At least it was no longer pouring rain. Clouds hung low and thick, hiding the tops of oaks, walling off the far side of the small pasture, where trailers of mist drifted like phantoms above the glistening grass. Massive, gnarled trunks sheltered dark shadows. Richard was angry and frustrated that it had to rain now of all times. If it hadn't rained, his chances would have been far better. Still, it would not be impossible. There were always signs. There would still be tracks. The rain would make it harder to read them, but even this much rain would not erase all trace of the tracks. Richard had grown up tracking animals and people through the woods. He could follow tracks in the rain. It was more difficult and more time-consuming, and it required intense concentration. But he could certainly do it. And then it hit him. When he found Kaylin's tracks, then he would have proof that she was real. Nicky and Kara would at last have no choice but to believe him. Everyone left unique tracks. He knew Kaylin's. He also knew the route they'd come in by. Along with his and Kara's tracks, Kaylin's tracks would also be there for all to see. A sense of hope, if not relief, surged up through him. Once he found a set of readable prints and showed them to Nicky and Kara, there would be no more arguing. They would realize that it wasn't a dream, and that there really was something seriously wrong. Then he could start following Kaylin's tracks out of their camp and find her. The rain would slow the effort, but it wouldn't stop him, and there might be a way for Nicky's ability to help speed that search. Men milling about outside saw him stepping out of the small house and rushed in from all around. These men were not soldiers in the strict sense. They were wagon drivers, millers, carpenters, stonemasons, farmers, and merchants who had struggled their whole life under the repressive rule of the order, trying to eke out a living and support their families. For most of these working people, life in the old world meant living in constant fear. Anyone who dared to speak out against the ways of the order was swiftly arrested, charged with sedition, and executed. There was a steady stream of charges and arrests, whether true or not. Such swift justice kept people in fear and in line. Continual indoctrination, especially of the young, produced a significant segment of the population who fanatically believed in the ways of the order. From birth, children were taught that thinking for themselves was wrong, and that fervent faith and selfless sacrifice for the greater good was the only means to an afterlife of glory in the Creator's light, and the only way to avoid an eternity in the dark depths of the underworld in the merciless hands of the Keeper. Any other way of thinking was evil. The properly devout were only too eager to see things remain as they were. The promise of riches to be shared with the common people kept the ever-pious supporters of the order perpetually waiting for their quota of the blood of others, waiting to share in the loot of the wicked, who, they were taught, were their selfish oppressors and therefore sinners who deserved their fate. From the ranks of the righteous came a flood of young men volunteering into the army, eager to be part of the noble struggle to crush the non-believers, to punish the wicked, to confiscate ill-gotten gains. The sanction of the plunder, the free reign of brutality, and the widespread rape of the unconverted bred a particularly vicious and virulent kind of zealotry. It had spawned an army of savages. Such was the nature of the Imperial Order soldiers who had poured into the New World and now rampaged nearly unchecked across Richard and Kaylin's homeland. The world stood at the brink of a very dark age. It was this very threat that Anne believed Richard had been born to fight. She and many others believed it was foretold that if free people were to have a chance to survive this great battle, have a chance to triumph, it would only be if Richard led them. These men before him saw through the empty ideas and corrupt promises of the order, saw it for what it was, tyranny. They had decided to take back their lives. That made them warriors in the struggle for freedom. A surprised upwelling of shouted greetings and cries of delight broke the early morning stillness. As they gathered in close, the men all talked at once, asking if he was well and how he felt. Their sincere concern touched him. Despite his sense of urgency, Richard forced himself to smile and clasp arms with men he knew from the city of Alterang. This was more the kind of reunion they had been hoping for. Besides, having worked beside many of these men and having become acquainted with others, Richard knew that he was also a symbol of liberty to them, the Lord Rawl from the New World, the Lord Rawl from a land where men were free. He had shown them that such things were possible for them too, and given them a vision of the way their lives could be. To his own mind, Richard saw himself as the same woods guide he had always been, even if he had been named the Seeker and now led the Daharan Empire. While he had gone through many trying times since leaving home, he was really the same person with the same beliefs. Where he had once stood up to bullies, he now had to face armies. While the scale was different, the principles were the same. But right then, all he cared about was finding Kaelin. Without her, the rest of the world, life itself, didn't seem very important to him. Not far off, leaning against a post, stood a brawny man wearing not a smile but a menacing glare that had set permanent creases in his brow. The man folded his powerful arms across his chest as he watched the rest of the men greeting Richard. Richard hurried through the crowd of men, clasping hands as he went, toward the scowling blacksmith. "Victor!" The scowl gave way to a helpless grin. The man gripped arms with Richard.
"Nikki and Carl would only let me go in to see you twice. If they didn't let me see you this morning, I was going to wrap iron bars around their necks."
"Was that you, the first morning? You passed me on your way out and touched my shoulder?" Victor grinned as he nodded.
"It was. I helped carry you back here."
He put a powerful hand on Richard's shoulder and gave him an experimental shake.
"You look well-mended, even if a little pale." "I have Lardo. It will give you strength."
"I'm fine. Maybe later. Thanks for helping bring me in here. Listen, Victor, have you seen Kaelin?" Victor's brow bunched back up with deep creases.
"Kaelin?"
"My wife." Victor stared without reaction. His hair was cropped so close that his head almost appeared shaved. The rain beaded on his scalp. One brow arched.
"Richard, since you have been gone, you took a wife?"
Richard anxiously looked over his shoulder to the other men watching him. "Have any of you seen Kaelin?" He was greeted with blank expressions from many. Others shared a puzzled look with one another. The gray morning had fallen silent. They didn't know who he was talking about. Many of these men knew Kaelin and should have remembered her. Now they were shaking their heads or shrugging their regrets. Richard's mood sank. The problem was worse than he thought. He had thought that maybe it was only something that had happened to Nikki and Kara's memory. He turned back to the master blacksmith's frown. "Victor, I have trouble and I don't have time to explain it. I don't even know how I would explain it. I need help."
"What can I do?"
"Take me to the place where we had the fight." Victor nodded.
"Easy enough."
The men turned and started out toward the dark woods.
This is the end of disc number one. Please insert disc number two.